For more information about this show, go to bookwaves.com,
where you'll also find an extended version of this interview.
Bookwaves is produced by Richard Walensky in the studios of KPFA Pacifica Radio in Berkeley, California.
Have you entered the KBOO Fall Membership Drive Sweepstakes? The grand prize is a trip to Busurias, Mexico, including $1,000 in airfare and a week's worth of lodging at Casa Tranquila. Other prizes include a Portland Center Stage Flex Pass, hundreds of dollars to Grand Central Bakery, and health and wellness packages at Evolution Healthcare and Fitness. We have raised over $10,000 at this time to help shorten the Fall Membership Drive. Remember, for every $15,000 we raise before September 9th, we will take one day off our fall membership drive. A donation is not required to enter the sweepstakes. For more info, visit kboo.fm/2015fallsweeps. And thank you to everyone who has donated early to the fall membership drive.
Lost, cold, cruel, hoax, this boy, night, most lost.
Good morning and welcome to the September edition of Black Book Talk. This is Patricia Welch, the library lady.
Over here with Reflections Mirror Image Books.
And we are delighted to welcome to the microphone this morning Walida Imarisha. You know, and we're inviting her today as one of the editors of Octavia's Brood, which is this fantastic science fiction anthology. We want to talk about the anthology, but we also want to talk a little bit about Walisha and what has brought her to the point of editing this book. So, Walida, welcome.
Thank you.
When I was thinking about you, I made a little note to myself. You're a writer that I know. You're a writer. You're a poet. You're an educator. You're an activist. Tell us about those strains of your life that came together and led you to say, okay, next step is now we need to edit this book, just for those who don't know you.
Sure. And I just wanted to note the song as we came in was by Tunde Olaniran, and it's called Transgressor. It's the title track off his new album, Transgressor. And he's one of the contributors to Octavia's Brood. So he's moving this kind of visionary sci-fi in music as well as, on the page.
Is he a local poet? He is not.
He's in Flint, Michigan. Our contributors are actually international right now. So, I've always kind of had a lot of different interests. Science fiction has always been something that I've loved since I was a kid. I'm a nerd from birth. I came by it, honestly. I think that as I got older and I became politicized, I was like, well, I need to put that to the side. I need to be serious. I can't play around. And I was lucky enough to meet communities of folks and build communities of folks who say, you know, actually, not only do science fiction and social change, not only can they coexist, but they actually need one another. And that's basically the premise of Octavia's Brood, is that we believe all organizing is science fiction.
Say a little bit more about that, though. Why do you believe that?
Sure. So we believe that, I mean, every time we imagine a world without police violence, without poverty, without war, without prisons, without capitalism, without borders, that's science fiction.
Okay.
Right? None of us have ever seen that world.
Yeah.
But if we are able to come together collectively, envision it, then we can begin to build it into reality. We can't begin to build what we can't imagine.
True.
So reality is manufactured?
Yes. I mean, I think that we are in control of creating reality. And I think that a lot of the powers that be, the societal powers, spend a lot of time trying to take that away from us, tell us how powerless we are, because they're terrified of the fact that, you know, the people have always been able to reshape and reimagine reality.
Okay, I'm curious about how you pull together, how you make the decision in terms of who's going to be in the anthology, who's interested. I mean, you have such a wide span of people who are involved in this. Tell us about them.
Yeah. So my co-editor is Adrienne Marie Brown, and she lives in Detroit, Michigan. We started by generating a list of organizers, activists, and change makers whose work inspires us and who we knew were good writers, right? Because you need a good foundation.
Yeah.
But that said, the majority of folks in our book had never written fiction, let alone science fiction, before this project. And that's why we wanted them. We wanted organizers and change makers who are sci-fi creators every single day. We think that they hold these new worlds every day, and they just needed the slightest bit of permission to let their imaginations unfurl.
Okay. But still, how long did this take?
This was a 5-year process, so it was a long incubation period with this baby.
You know, and you're so familiar with it. You assume you know how it went, and you probably think it's like run-of-the-mill, but I mean, to me, just the whole idea, I mean, you got to identify the people, you have to persuade them. Tell us just a little bit more about this 5-year process, and also how you came to work with Adrienne Marie Brown. How does this happen?
Sure. Well, Adrienne and I were both kind of working in this concept of sci-fi social change separately. She was doing Octavia Butler emergent strategy sessions. Octavia Butler was an incredible feminist science fiction writer, MacArthur Genius Award winner, brilliant visionary, unfortunately, who passed away. But Adrienne was using her books, which, you know, center, you know, folks who have been marginalized, almost all of the main characters are women of color, change is collective. She was using this where organizers would read the book together and then say, what lessons can we pull out of this for our movement? So she was doing that work while I was doing work around visionary fiction, which, you know, we sort of define as fantastical fiction that can help us challenge existing power dynamics as well as envision new worlds. So we were working in these kind of parallel universes.
Okay.
And then they collided. And
how did you meet each other? A conference?
We actually met. I was editing an edition of Left Turn magazine, which was a national organizing magazine, and it was a visionary fiction edition. And one of the editors of Left Turn, you know, suggested Adrienne write something, and she wrote a beautiful piece on Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler, and that's how we met. And then Adrienne emailed me, I think a few months later, and said, "Hey, we're both doing this work. We should do an anthology together." And I was like, that sounds great. And she's like, yeah, maybe in a year. And I was like, oh, it's one of those projects, never going to happen, right? The aspirational project.
Yeah.
And then she sent another email like an hour later and said, let's just do it now. So we actually did not meet in person until a year into our process.
Wow.
So it was all Skype, Google Hangout. It was very digital. I was like, this is sci-fi.
Brave new world.
Exactly.
Who is the publisher of this book? Is it self-published or?
No, our publisher is AK Press, and so they are an independent leftist publisher, and it's actually published in conjunction with the Institute for Anarchist Studies. But this is AK's first science fiction book. They actually publish more analysis and work aimed at social justice movements and organizing radical movements, and so this was a kind of step into the unknown for them as well.
Okay, so in contacting them, did you reach out to a number of publishers in order to be selected for this book, to be published by them?
Yeah, we reached out to a lot of publishers, and the majority of publishers said, this sounds like a good idea, and we have no idea how to sell this. We don't know what genre this fits into. We don't understand how to market it. We don't know who would buy it. And we were like, well, we know that there's actually huge demand for it. You also have a book full of organizers who know how to organize, right? So we know how to get the word out. We know how to plan events. We know how to, you know, put in the work. And it was actually a really long process with publishing, where we had one publisher who was interested, who actually they went bankrupt. And then we were like, well, we're going to self-publish. And then when we were deep in that, we were like, "Ooh, this is a lot more work than we thought it was going to be." And it was, you know, sort of like the heavens opened up and, you know, smiled down on us, because that's when AK Press and the Institute for Anarchist Studies reached out to us and said, "Hey, we'd be interested in putting this out if you're interested." And they were our kind of dream publisher in the beginning. So it was many years later, but it all came full circle.
Okay, so you and the co-editor Brown, you formed a corporation or a business in order to sign a contract with this publisher?
No, we signed it individually. Yeah, we just signed it as writers.
See, that's the bookstore.
We want the technical background. Tell us some of the people who are included.
Absolutely. We have so many amazing pieces in here that it's always hard for me to just pick out a few, because I'm like, that. Oh, wait, and then there's this one.
Well, I'm just going to mention some. I mean, LeVar
sure.
Burton.
Yes.
I'm just saying, you know, we know him from
Reading Rainbow.
And Star Trek.
Yes.
Tanana Reeve-Dhu, who I absolutely love. Yes. Absolutely. Terry Bisson, I'm not familiar with that name.
Yeah, Terry Bisson is, he's been a science fiction writer for decades. I actually read his work before I knew he was sort of a radical person. And his book, we've excerpted Fire on the Mountain, which he wrote in the 1980s, I think, okay, is a foundational visionary fiction piece, because it starts with the premise, what if John Brown's rebellion against slavery had been successful?
Yes, I remember that one.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, Mumia? I mean, my gosh.
Yes, we have political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal wrote an essay on Star Wars. Mumia is not only a brilliant organizer, visionary, and courageous freedom fighter, he is a huge nerd, which is so exciting.
So how did you go about getting his permission or whatever to do this? Or was this something he had written in the past or something he wrote specifically for this?
Yeah, he wrote it specifically for us. I had been lucky enough. I used to live in Philadelphia. He's in Pennsylvania. And I would go and visit with him.
Okay.
And during one of the visits, I was trying to be, like I said before, very serious as a, you know, serious organizer. And I let a Star Trek reference slip. And I was like, oh, no, I just embarrassed myself in front of Mumia. And he just rolled with it. He was like, right, live long and prosper. That's why we need science fiction, because it allows. And I was like, is this happening? Mumia is a nerd. This is amazing. So I was writing with him, and I told him about this project in the beginning, and he wrote back and he was like, exactly. I mean, if you look at Star Wars and the ways that it's, you know, really a concept of American imperialism. And I was like, could you write that in an essay if you have time? Because that is the most brilliant analysis of Star Wars I've ever heard. And 3 weeks later, he sent me the essay. And we were actually lucky enough that we got an audio recording of him reading it before he got sick. He's actually incredibly sick right now. There's a campaign to get him proper health care, which the prison is denying him. So I encourage everyone to go to freemumia.com and support his case.
Good. Kalamu Ya Salaam?
Yes.
I mean, way back.
Yes.
But I don't remember reading anything that had to do with science fiction. Is this somebody that you had to say you can... Why don't you consider this genre, or had he been doing it?
Oh, no. Yeah, Kalamu Ya Salaam has been writing science fiction for years. He has pieces in both Dark Matter collections, edited by Cherie Renee Thomas, which is, you know, foundational, came out in the 90s, 100 years of speculative fiction from the African diaspora.
And I feel like I read the first, like, from beginning to end, so I must have read something by him and didn't even realize.
Yes.
But still, it's exciting to know. Go on.
Yes.
And people need to know about Dark Matter, that,
yes,
that, you know, people of color have been writing science fiction.
Absolutely. Yes. And the editor of the Dark Matter anthology, Shireen Renee Thomas, Adrian and I were so honored that she agreed to be our advisor. So she read through the entire project and gave us thoughts on both individual stories as well as the entire project, and was just so supportive. It's just been such an honor doing this process because I've been able to be in contact with these Black visionaries and other visionaries as well. But especially as a young Black nerd, those Black visionaries were so important to me, and to be in contact with them and to see that not only are they these brilliant, creative, innovative folks, they're also some of the sweetest, nicest, most giving and caring people. It's just been an honor to be in communion with everyone involved in this book.
You're listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO.
Okay. And we are talking to Walida Amarisha, and we are talking about the new book that she has co-edited, and it is Octavia's Brood. Give us the full title.
It's Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction Stories from Social Justice Movements.
Okay, and we were talking about just the fabulous collection of contributors that you have. You want to mention some others that we haven't even touched on?
Sure. So the introductory piece is by Bao Phi, who is a organizer and spoken word poet in Minneapolis, and his piece, Revolution Shuffle, is about a zombie apocalypse that takes place in an internment camp. Which is just, you know, incredibly powerful. We have Morgan Phillips, who's an organizer and trainer from Boston, and her piece, The Long Memory, focuses on this fantasy world. She's like the biggest fantasy nerd ever, so I was like, Morgan, you have to write a fantasy piece, where memory is basically in danger of being erased, and the people have to fight to hold on to this memory, which is what allows them to make change, right, in this fantasy world. And we have Dewalu Jabari Anderson, who is an amazing artist with the Otabega Jones and Associates Collective in Houston, Texas. And he wrote a piece called Sanford and Son, which is a fake radio script or fake script of from the show Sanford and Son, about a fictional meeting between Fred Sanford and Sun Ra, the Afrofuturist.
Space is the place.
Right, exactly, musician. And so it's Sanford and Sun, S-U-N. And I swear when I read it, I was like, I'm sorry, was this a real episode and you just found this? Because this sounds exactly like Sanford and Sun and Sun Ra. It was brilliant. Yes. So
you mixed comedy with jazz?
Yes, Dewalu Jabari Anderson did. And I, you know, we were so excited to get that. And it's in the form of a radio script. So it's, you know, it's a whole different, you know, genre of creative writing. It's not just a standard kind of short story. And a lot of our authors did that. Alexis Pauline Gums, who is an incredible Black scholar, visionary, and poet, basically wrote this letter to her future self and from her future self. But the question is, you know, is the future impacting the past? Or, you know, in the same way that the past can impact the future. But she, you know, she wrote poems for it and interspliced those with kind of these musings as well as sci-fi stories.
And there's artwork?
Yes. Yeah.
It's just,
yeah. Alixa Garcia's In Spite of Darkness, she actually has paintings. Her story started with the drawings. She made them, and then 7 years later, she hadn't done anything but the drawings. And 7 years later, we asked her to write this story. And she said, I'd kind of forgotten about these drawings. And then this story starts flowing, and I realize I'm writing these drawings that I made 7 years ago that I wasn't even consciously in my mind.
Incubating.
Mm-hmm.
It's incubating.
Yes.
Travel. Once you got all of this list of contributors together, then what means did you have to go and individually meet them face to face?
We never individually met with most of the contributors face to face. It really was, this was like a futuristic digital project. And so, and the editing process, I've been an editor for, you know, 15 years on magazines, newspapers. I've edited another book. This was by far the most collaborative editing process ever. Some of these stories went through 7 and 8 rounds of editing. The writers were so generous with their time and their energy and their vision, because we wanted to ensure that these are visionary stories that can help us build new futures, and that they were compelling narratives. narratives.
So there wasn't a lot of ego, which I guess writers are used to being edited. So it wasn't the ego of what? You're coming back again? It was just...
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, as an editor, writers have a huge amount of ego. Well, I have ego, right? I mean,
so how do you keep going back and go? I mean, you know, a few runs, a few changes, but...
I mean, I think that it just shows how committed these folks were to the process, to the concept, to the idea, and how excited they were about it. Many of the writers that we spent a lot of time editing have said how thankful they are and how they feel like it was a really useful process. And I know for my own personal writing, being in this editing process was an incredible learning experience, seeing so many other writers' processes and how they, you know, we would give folks suggestions. Oh, you could do this here or this or this. And the great thing was most of them didn't take any of our suggestions. They came up with something so much better than we could have ever imagined. We're like, whoa, that was amazing.
Well, one thing I appreciate, I read some sci-fi and fantasy, whatever, not a whole lot, but sometimes the images in sci-fi can be so, some images can be sort of grim and depressing, or it's just, it can feel serious, but you know, there was a nice range, you know, it's just the range of visions and tone and everything. You could laugh. You can smile. So I just appreciated that. And I would say, if there are those of you who are listening who say, you know, I don't do sci-fi, you don't really have to do sci-fi. You can just kind of open yourself up to this. And there's probably going to be something more, probably much more than one, but something that you will enjoy. And I do have to say, I had asked you earlier, you know, I was wondering how the book was doing, like in the retail world, because you can't get your hands on it at the library. I checked this morning. There are all kinds of holes, which is wonderful.
Yes.
It says that people are reading and appreciating it and talking about it.
Yes.
So is it doing well nationally?
Yes, it's doing amazingly well. We actually sold out of our first run within less than a month. We're actually on our third run of the book, and it's only been out since the beginning of April.
Yeah.
So the selling out in less than a month caught all of us, including the publisher, a little off guard. So there was a few weeks where it wasn't available because they were scrambling. And the response has been great. The reviews have been great, you know, from professional critics, as well as just, you know, what really means a lot to us is folks on the ground. Folks are really using this in a variety of settings. Our goal was not just to put out the anthology, but to have folks use it to actually do the practice of visionary fiction, of including this kind of fantastical dreaming and organizing work. So we have workshops that we do with it that we have been, we toured for 3 months and did workshops and readings and interactive dialogues and strategy sessions, all based around science fiction and social change. Folks are using it. One of the places that I love that people are using it is inside prisons, that we've actually been told by half a dozen folks who go into prisons and teach that they are using the book with prisoners, and that the prisoners are actually writing their own visionary fiction, which is so powerful and inspiring to me.
Do you have any programs coming up in Portland anytime soon?
We have some that are planned in November and then some that are up in the air. Folks can always go to our website, octaviasbrood.com, and we have a calendar. We put all of our public events as soon as they're confirmed, and we constantly update it.
Why the title?
Yes. So the title is definitely in honor of Octavia Butler. So I think that every writer in it talked about Octavia and her central role in helping us envision new worlds and kind of reframe. You know, a lot of the science fiction in the mainstream is, you know, it's a Western in space, right? It's the lone military, straight, white, cis dude who's going to save the world against the aliens who are often categorized as people of color, right? And the rest of us are just cowering and waiting for him to save us. And we feel like, you know, for a lot of us, Octavia's Butler work just turned that on its head and said, we're going to center the people who have been marginalized. We're not going to see the alien as invader, but, you know, as folks we have to figure out how to engage with. We're going to see change as collective, as decentralized from the bottom up. So we created, Adrian and I created concrete principles of visionary fiction. And when we were done, we realized, oh, we learned a lot of these from Octavia Butler. So we were like, we have to honor Octavia and her work by calling it Octavia's Brood.
Well, getting back to the budget, now you say this is your third run that, and you'll be on your fourth. How do you go about putting the money together for investing in a run? How many books do you print at a time?
Well, that's our publisher does that, so we're not doing it. Our publisher is the one who's doing it.
Okay, yeah. And so when you get low again, then you'll go back to them for the fourth run.
They're the ones who usually tell us that, you know, we're about to sell out. We've ordered a next run. You know, as that gets low, they let us know, okay, just so y'all know, we're getting ready for this run. So they're doing all the inventory. We, you know, we only engage with the books when we're at an event and, you know, selling the books.
So there. The book can be ordered through the publisher too?
Oh, sure.
So you
absolutely
might want to give that email number,
sure,
website,
yeah,
address.
Absolutely, thank you. If you, our publisher is AK Press, so if you just go to akpress.org, I think, or com, I'm not sure. It's a dot something. Just Google it. you'll find them. It's actually at Powell's, both online and in the store. But if folks want to go to Powell's, I suggest you go soon because they actually keep selling out within like a week. Which
and it
is
sells
awesome.
For how much? A
it's
copy?
$18. Yeah.
Now, are you getting rich off of this book?
Absolutely not.
I didn't think so, but people need to know that too. They're like, oh, wait a minute, we need to hit her up for a contribution. We are coming. We have about 5 minutes or so left. I want to make sure that before you leave, that we hear something, you read something sure. from the book. So it's totally up to you. Just let us know. But we want our listeners to hear something from Octavia's Brood.
Sure. I have a short story in it called Black Angel that I'm actually working on turning into a novel and a graphic novel. So I'll just read an excerpt of that. The main character, her name is A, and she's a grumpy, big-haired black woman, fallen angel. So, you know, I'm like, you know, not autobiographical, but and she was kicked out of heaven by God for trying to stop a genocide happening on Earth, and she's not happy about it, so she doesn't want to help humans anymore. A looked up and realized she had walked much further than she usually did on her nightly wanderings. The black neighborhood of Harlem had blended into an immigrant one, with bodega signs in at least 3 different languages, ads for international calling cards plastered on every surface. Just as she started to think about turning back, she heard a huge tumult, like 1,000 hearts being ripped apart at once. Screams. No matter what language, she knew the sound of desperate prayers hurtled towards an impassive sky. Without thinking, A sprinted towards the noise. She turned the corner to see pure horror. People poured out of a tenement building like a river of tears. Families, children, elders, all immigrants. They were shoved, driven, beaten by men in bulletproof vests carrying automatic weapons, the kind usually reserved for military warfare. The stomp of boots like bombshells exploding. A line of industrial-sized trucks, each branded Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. The agents threw people on top of each other into the trucks until they were full, then started on the next. Bodies packed in, shackled together for the forced passage south to the border. A had heard about this. Once it had made its arrest quota set for it by Congress, ICE had no more use for the undocumented immigrants it snared. Since the economy had bottomed out, all new prison construction ceased, and politicians tried to do triage on the budget. What prisons there were already overflowed with bodies, too often black and brown. But the ingenious and insidious waste not, want not ideology of the system kicked in. After scanning everyone, ICE loaded them into trucks and drove them just across the Mexican border. They sold other humans to the U.S. corporation's giant factories a stone's throw away. These corporations bought workers by the truckload. Most didn't last a year, toiling in the unventilated 100-degree-plus heat of the dangerous and toxic production lines. A's heart sank. This was the embodiment of the evils humans do to each other. Even animals don't turn in each other unless they have to. But humans? Humans do it at the slip of a dollar. ICE must have been at this a while because there are only 2 dozen or so folks left. How many hours has it taken them to clear this building of hundreds, A thought desperately. Why hasn't anyone done something? What are all these people doing in these surrounding buildings? Why haven't they called the authorities? A reflection of light caught her eye, the luminescence of streetlight bouncing off the badge of a New York cop. Courtesy, professionalism, respect, the NYPD's motto. The authorities were already here, watching ICE round up people and send them to their deaths. No one was coming to help.
Ah. And that was Walita Ivarisha reading from Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction Stories from Social Justice Movements. And the particular story again was?
Black Angel.
thank you so much for joining us. I want to ask you just one final question before we depart. In addition to the people who have been who are featured in this anthology, are there any other voices, specifically African American and others after that, that we should be aware of? Because I don't think that science fiction gets as much attention in the general market for African Americans. So is anybody else we need to be aware of?
Oh, so many.
I'm trying to think. Is it A.J. Jemison?
N.K. Jemison.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with her work?
Yes, she's amazing. Definitely incredible fantasy work.
Yes.
Nnedi Okorafor, who's doing amazing work. A lot of it set in Africa and Nigeria and the Sudan. Nalo Hopkinson, who does kind of magical realism, especially in the Caribbean. Nalo Hopkinson also edited a post-colonial collection called So Long Dreaming, which is beautiful. Stephen Barnes, as you said before, yes. Tananarive Due. And of course, Samuel Delaney, who's like the godfather of Black science fiction.
Yeah.
There's such a whole host of new amazing writers who are coming up in these genres and sort of breaking these genres. I definitely encourage folks to check that out. But also, especially, I think that the Dark Matter collections, two volumes, right?
Yeah, right.
The first and the second is called Reading the Bones. Just gives such a powerful array of writers from W.E.B. Du Bois writing in science fiction in 1920 up into folks like Nnedi Okorafor, who started putting out recently books.
Well, Walida, you are always doing amazing work, no matter what genre, whether it's spoken word, poetry, education, whatever. You are always, always, always just pushing out creativity and light. We thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. Thank you all so much for the space you hold in Portland.
Folks, this is it for Black Book Talk September. See you again in October. This is Patricia Welch signing
out. And Obie Hill.
All right. Have a good month.
Bye-bye.
Boy, not most lost gold hoax. This boy, not most. My mother couldn't tell me where to go. My father pointed to the same road. And so I took the lesson on. My beating heart tells me I should've known.
And you're tuned to Community Radio KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River, and 104.3 FM Philomath and the Willamette Valley. This KBOO program has been made possible.